Hey there, welcome to the Dressage with Amelia podcast, where it's all about breaking things down and helping you learn to love your ride. I'm your host, Amelia Newcomb. These sessions are recordings from my Facebook Live, where I answer as many questions as I can from my audience. I hope you enjoy this episode where I answer your questions about dressage. Please help me out and share this with a friend who also rides horses.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Dressage with Amelia. If you are new here, welcome. If you're not new here, you might be wondering who I am, since I am not Amelia. Hello, my name is Nicole. I am a colleague of Amelia's, and I'm a licensed coach, and I'm also a licensed dressage judge. And so this week, Amelia is actually out of the office, out of the house. And so she wasn't going to be able to do her regular scheduled live. So she asked if I could step in, which I am thrilled to do. If you are a member of any of Amelia's masterclasses in the past or her program Strides with Amelia, you may have seen me before. My name is Nicole, like I mentioned, and I do some of the office hours and back end things. And so I've made appearances on Amelia's channel before. You may have also remember me from in the summer. Sometimes when I visit Amelia, we do lives together as well. So, but today you just get me. So let me know how I'm doing. Please let me know if you're enjoying my chat, not enjoying my chat. I'm never offended and feedback is always good. So it lets Amelia know if she should let me do it again, or if you don't like me and maybe she shouldn't. But either way, I'm never offended. Today we are talking about horse show prep. As a judge, I sometimes have a little bit of a different eye or feel for things than other people do. And I love being able to be a judge and give feedback. I find it a really fulfilling way to give back to my community, as well as it makes me a little bit selfishly, it makes me a better rider and coach. Someone's saying they're wondering if the audio is not working. Let me know in the comments if you can hear me all right. If not, then I will check in for that. Stacy says, hi, excited for show prep. So am I, Stacy. Barbara says, hey, Nicole. Hey. But I've got a whole bunch of questions to go through today. But before we did that, I wanted to go through a little bit of a quote. Someone says, I can hear you. Perfect. Awesome. Great to hear that. Thank you so much for letting me know. Before we dive into questions today, which if you didn't get your question on the post, feel free to ask it in the chat because I can see it there. But before we jump in, I wanted to read a quote from a book, one of my favorite books. It's called That Winning Feeling, and it's by Jane Savoy. And this book is all about a lot of different mental preparation techniques and how to make the most of your showing experience. She also did a second book, which was not all about the ribbons, both great books. But I wanted to read this quote before we jump into questions to kind of set the tone, because I really feel like it emulates what I believe showing is. To win, let us understand, is not necessarily limited to bringing home the blue ribbon. It is about developing your potential and using it for a purpose that makes you happy. It is about leaving your all too familiar comfort zone and striving for more than you could ever achieve. It's about putting forth the kind of effort that makes you proud to sign your name to your work. I love that because that's really what showing is. It's showing off what you've accomplished with your horse, showing off what you've done. Look, telling the world, look, I'm proud of this. This is what I've done. And the ribbons are just on top of it. And as you know, for being a dressage rider, sometimes you can go and have a great test, a 74% test, and you're still not the first place in the class because it really depends on what everyone else does. So I always try to tell people to compete against yourself, compare yourself against where you were last show, last year, last season. And don't think of it so much of, oh, I didn't get first place. Think about it. Oh my gosh, that was my best exhibit of what I could do today. Like, and treat it like that. And then you're never going to have a bad show experience. someone's saying they have this book and Jane autographed it for them. Oh, I'm very jealous. She was one of my favorite, all-time favorite trainers. And I regret not being able to ever meet her in person. Anyways, we're going to get on to the questions. Like I said, feel free to drop your questions below if you didn't get a chance to ask them before. We've also had some more people join, and you might be wondering, who is this and where is Amelia? Hi, I'm Nicole. I'm a licensed dressage judge and coach, and I'm here subbing in for Amelia as she is away today. What's the title again? Kathy says, It's That Winning Feeling by Jane Savoy. All right, jumping into questions, Hannah asks, we have our first show of the season over the weekend. Awesome. Her question is, how do you make yourself remember parts of the test that seem to escape, i.e. the halt and rein back at A in 3-3? Even after reminding myself out loud before going down center line, I still forget it in my test. Yes, I forget that one too. And it's the halts, rein backs are tricky because they kind of just get thrown in there. Whereas all the other movements kind of flow into one another. The best advice I can give you is get a reader, because when you're not at championships or it's not a championship class, you can have a reader. And it's great to have the insurance. You know, you need to know what your test is to be able to ride your test effectively, but having that reader ensures that you don't forget the rein back. And theoretically, if you have a reader every show for six shows before you get to championships, you should know and be more familiar with the test by then in order to be able to do it without the reader. The other thing I love about that is oftentimes when we're going to shows, we have a non-horsey partner or a non-horsey friend or a non-horsey parent that is kind of just standing around all day being like, what can I do to help? And you're like, you don't really have anything for them to do except for maybe hold your water bottle. And that's a great way to include them in the showing process. And they don't have to know anything about horses, and they don't need to know and have any like contact with your horse if you've got a young horse or a green horse and you're worried about them kind of getting into trouble. And I find it's a really great way to help them feel empowered and value your show experience too. Just make sure they don't get ahead of you. That did happen once to my mother when she was reading to me. She got ahead of where I was in the test. Luckily, I did know my test at that point. But yeah, that's my biggest advice. And then, like I said, by the time you get to championships, you should know it a little bit better because you've run through it more times. Gabby asks, what's a good tip for people that have never done a show? Go to a show before you go to a show. So try and go volunteer, go with a friend and just groom for them, kind of get the lay of the land. It's even better if it's a show for grounds that you're going to go to. That way you can kind of see where the warm-up arena is, where do they post the test results, where the stabling is. You know, you can kind of find out where the washrooms are before you have to get there and be there with your horse. So that's a great way to kind of get familiarized of what's going on and get the lay of the land, and you meet people too. So that way, the next time you go, you kind of already know, oh, that person's the steward because they were here last time, or that's the whipper in and that sort of thing there. Someone's asking, can you have a reader in a qualifying class? Yes. So typically championship classes, you can't. It depends on what you're qualifying for. Depends on if you can have a reader or not. If you're ever unsure about any rule, go see the steward or technical delegate at the horse show. They are the ones in charge of knowing the rule books. They know the rule books way better than the judges do, and they will answer those questions for you. So then you know right off the bat, and then you can refer back to them if you get in trouble. Stacy said, if I had my husband call my test for me, it would be disastrous. Well, then you just have to practice, Stacy, beforehand, before you get to the show. Let's see any other questions have come up. All right, moving on. Shaughnessy is saying, I'm planning on showing. Awesome. I guess my biggest question is, how would you salvage a test? Let's say the horse gets braced, you miss a movement, etc., to get the most points overall. Yeah, okay. So for that, what you have to do is you have to know your test. And this is where, being a judge, I have a little bit of an advantage, because I probably know the tests and the structure of the tests more than you guys do, but it doesn't mean you can't learn. Essentially, what you want to do is know your test where the movements start and end. So for example, the training level test, they say something like B, circle 20 meters, and then A, walk, or whatever it is, right? That means that movement at B starts at B, is the whole circle, and then goes all the way down to A. So if something happens in that circle, you know, you have all the time until A to get, you know, whether it was a canter circle and you lost the canter, you can get your canter back before you get to A to do the transition. But essentially what you want to kind of plan your thinking is, okay, if I say, for that example, you lost the canter, you want to be able to pick up the canter again before the movement ends so that you can get a point for the transition mark coming back. Because if you don't, then you've missed 2 points, right? 2 boxes where you could have gotten a score. So knowing where your movement starts and ends, that also works if your horse is having a spook or, you know, if you've messed up something in, for another good example would be the halt rein back. That is one movement. So if the halt is bad, you don't need to worry about the rein back being perfect because they're a combined mark, right? So really knowing where the boxes start and end can really help you as a rider be strategic, thinking, okay, I messed up that. How do I fix it before the next movement starts so that I don't carry it on? And then the other thing to remember is if you are at a schooling show or something like that, don't be afraid to just do a circle and reorganize and like carry on, because that's what schooling shows are for. And depending on the judge, if it's an intentional circle because your horse is spooking, they probably won't ring you out and make you redo the movement. They'll just let you carry on and it will count as a off course. But yeah, knowing your test and being strategic, looking at it. And so what you can do to a way to help you with that is to actually watch somebody ride the test. Amelia's got some great tests online already. So you can go ahead and look and watch them and follow along and be like, okay, that movement goes all the way to there, and then go from that. Great question. Stacy asks, can you explain what happens in a dressage equitation class? Yeah, so there's 2 different types of dressage equitation classes. There's one type where it's like a traditional flat class where everyone comes in their arena and they, you know, walk, trot, canter around together. And then the other type of equitation class is where there's actually 2 judges, and one judge judges the technical test and then the other judge judges your position and execution of like your gates and your transitions and things. So what you have to do for the actual like equitation part is just, you know, it's your symmetry and balance and alignment. You know, are you sitting straight? Are you collapsing one way? Are your aids effective? You know, did it take you 6 strides to pick up the canter? Where, you know, did the horse really resist? Things like that. So that's a great question, Stacey. Laura asks, what is a good way to release the anxiety and nerves, both you and the horse, the day of / the day before? Well, that's going to be a little different depending on who you are and who your horse is and things like that. But for me, the biggest thing that I can do to remove my anxiety is be prepared, right? So doesn't matter what it is, if you're going to show intro level or Grand Prix, be prepared. You know where all your stuff is. You know exactly what you're going to wear. You know what time you're going to show up. You know what time you need to start tacking up so that you're ready at the right time. You know when your coach is going to meet you by the ring. You know everything. Don't leave anything up to chance. Don't leave anything, oh, I'll get that later. Do everything, plan everything. Because if you have that plan, then there's no questions of what's going to happen, right? And that can really help you reduce your anxiety. I know Amelia does a lot of visualization herself. For me, I like to have a really relaxing day the day before with my horses, and I try not to work them too hard. I do lots of stretchy work and things like that, because I find if I start practicing the test like the day or two before the horse show, I start messing things up. Funny story, it was the week before my very first PSG test, and I had been like working on it all year. And the week before, I, for whatever reason, couldn't get my walk to left lead canter, which is in the test after your free walk in the PSG. And all week long, I couldn't get it. And I was so upset. And I just kept practicing it. And I couldn't get it. And I couldn't get it. And I could get it. It just made me more and more anxious. Luckily, my horse was really, really good. And when we got into the test, he knew the test better than I did. And he picked up his left lead canter from walk. But ever since then, I've really acknowledged myself, like, practicing the test movements for me does not work. So I focus on the rhythm and the relaxation, the adjustability and the stride, those sort of things. What might also work for you is getting there the day before, getting prepped, Some people prefer to have a lesson the day before, some people don't. Try a few things out, see what works for you and works with your horse. And that might change depending on which horse you're riding. Stacey asks, how do you know which type of class you're in, rail type or test? Oh, for the dressage equitation class, it will say in the program, and if not, just clarify with the show secretary. It should say in the prize book which one it is. And so I think the one with the technical test is more for children, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. But like I said, ask your show secretary. Gabby's asking, how do you warm up before your test ride? Do you practice specific patterns over and over, or do you have a set routine? And how many test patterns do you typically do in one show? 2, 3, question mark. Great question, Gabby. So like I said, your warm-up and will be really dependent on who you are, the horse you have, the experience level of your horse, and what level you're riding. So if you have a horse that's a little bit older and more seasoned, you probably don't need as long of a warm-up because you don't want them to get too tired. They're probably experienced out and used to being out and about, so you don't need to give them as long of a warm-up to like acclimatize to what's going on at the horse show. I don't like to drill everything in my test, but I like to like hit a few key marks. Like I like to try a little bit of a stretch. I like to try my transitions. I'll do my rein back, things like little elements, but I won't drill them. Remember that a horse show is about showing off what you know, not about schooling what you know. So anything that you're doing in the warm-up should be stuff that you're really confident at doing at home, right? And so what you do is you get into the warm-up, you do your walk around, you let them stretch, you get them look around, pick up your trot, do some transitions, do some serpentines, bending, things like that. If you have a movement that you know you're going to want to kind of think about or focus about, you might do that pattern once or twice, but you don't really want to drill the patterns per se. Specific, also, if you're in the warm-up, you know, there's going to be a lot of other people going all around, so you might not be able to do the shapes as well. But the best thing you can do is get out to a few schooling shows or time it at home, see how long it takes you to do your warm-up. Your warm-up at home at the show shouldn't vary very much from your warm-up at home either, so keep that in mind. And it be prepared to change if you come out with your seasoned horse and he all of a sudden is a bit spicier, you might need a few extra minutes, so just keep that in mind too. She also asks, how many test patterns would you typically do in one show? 2, 3, question mark. So the legal requirement, the upper limit of what we're allowed to do at a horse show is 4 national tests, and I believe it's 2 FEI tests. I can't remember the FEI regulation one because that one changes if it's a CDI or not. So on that note, how many tests you would do would be dependent on, again, your level, what you're schooling, that sort of thing. If you're doing intro level, 2 or 3 tests, you can do up to 4. If you're worried about your young horse, not getting enough exposure to the show, do 4 and then just be prepared that like some of them are going to be schooling rides that you're just going to go in and just kind of get exposure, right? But 4 is a lot. It can be very like mentally taxing on the horses as well. I'll often book 2 or 3 tests if they're national tests. Like the lower levels, like anything under second level, I'll do 2 or 3 and I'll probably scratch 1 or 2 of them depending on the horse. That way if on the first day I'm like, my horse is super hot, I can go in a couple times. What I wouldn't do is do different tests. Try and make it the same test per day. So you can do, say it's first level test 1, and then there's usually a first level test of choice, and do test 1 up that way as well. Then you're not thinking about which test am I riding now sort of thing. And then for the upper level classes, anything other higher than third level, maybe like some horses I would maybe do 2 third level tests, but anything higher than that, just the 1. It's a lot on them to do the FEI classes. It's a lot of work physically for them to do the pirouettes and the changes and the extensions, and it's just not worth putting the extra wear and tear on their body to do more classes per day. Unless you were really needing a score or something like that. And then also if you had an older horse, I might limit it to 1 or 2 tests per day, even if you were doing lower levels, just so that it's not as much effort, not as hard on them. The other thing to think about is how long you're at the horse show. Some of our dressage shows are only 1 day, so your horse may be able to do more, But if it's a 3-day show, you know, don't do as many, or at least on the last day, give them only one or two tasks so that's not as hard on them. Chris is asking, what is the warm-up ring etiquette? Look up, look where you're going. No. So typically we pass in, sorry, typically when we are in a country that drives on the right-hand side of the road, we do the same thing in the warm-up arena. So we pass like we're driving. So left shoulder to left shoulder. If you're in Australia or somewhere else where you drive on the opposite side of the road, note that that will be switched. We once had an Australian rider that I worked with, and he kept on running into people in the arena, and it happened for months. And it was because he was going right to right and we were going left to left. And then typically what you do is anyone who's schooling a figure or a movement or a line, like a line of changes and things like that, gets priority. Anyone who's going a faster gait gets the outside rail. If you're just walking your horse, go to the middle sort of thing. If you have a horse that's obviously having trouble or something like that, or a green horse that's sticking to a circle, you try to give them the benefit of the doubt and give them space as much as you can. And then you can also, if you're feeling like you need to, you can also call when you're going around. Don't be afraid to just be like outside, inside, so that people, because sometimes people are in their own worlds, especially at horse shows. And so it's nice to kind of let them know. Keep your eye out for horses with red ribbons in their tail, because those are kickers or horses that need more space. So you want to give them lots of space so you don't get into sticky situations. Gabby's asking, what kind of tail braid do you use in dressage? We actually don't do tail braids in dressage. Some of the eventers do, and I kind of get that because they want to accentuate the muscles in the butt and stuff like that. But typically we don't, because if you tighten the hairs around the tail, it can do two things. One, it can make the horse feel a little uncomfortable, so it might make them turn the wrong way in their pelvis. The other thing is if you tighten it and then they're holding it funny, like they're sticking it out because it's tight, it will actually make your horse look crooked. So we don't braid our horses' tails. We just let them be all silky and smooth and loose. Stacy says, I once had a TT come up to me and suggest I remove my tail braid. Yeah, that's probably why. Kathy asks, can you leave the mane unbraided? Depends on the show you're at, Kathy. If it's a schooling show, you can definitely leave the mane unbraided, although I'd suggest that it's neat and tidy and brushed. If it's at a regulated show, I believe you do need to have the mane braided, but you can do any sort of braid. You can do a running braid, you can do bobble braids, things like that. Great questions. Jennifer is asking, visualization is recommended as part of show prep. Yep. But I've learned that it actually produces anxiety for me. I used to do it, and then I realized it was producing the opposite effect on me. I had to not only stop, but force myself not to visualize. I can practice my test on a whiteboard or walking out in my living room, but visualizing it in my head has been counterproductive for me. What am I doing wrong? And or should I just chalk it up to something that doesn't work for me? That's a really good question, Jennifer. So first off, it might not work for you, which is fine. But remember that visualization goes both ways, right? So you can visualize something good over and over and over again, and it will help your performance. You can visualize something bad going on again and again and again, and it will also affect your performance. So going back to my story of not being able to do my walk to left lead canter, it didn't happen once in that week, and then it got worse and worse and worse and worse, and I was doing a little bit of a spiral on it, right? Whereas if it had happened regularly on a regular week, I wouldn't have cared and I would have gone back and been able to get the left lead, right? So that's important to remember, is that you will perfect what you practice, both in real life and in your mind. So when you're practicing, and also remember that visualization is a skill that you have to develop, just like any other skill. So the first few times you do it, you might be clumsy at it. What I would probably suggest is don't practice your visualization for your horse show. Practice it for something else. Like, it could be something non-horse related. Like if you're having to like go order a pizza or something, you could visualize like walking up to the counter, like where you're going to stand, like, and do that process that way and thinking about it positively as you go. So that way you're practicing your visualization before you practice something stressful, which is your horse show, right? Because you probably have anxiety around the horse show. So my assumption is probably when you're visualizing, you're getting a bit anxious in your head, and then you're practicing getting anxious, right? The other thing you can do with your visualization is to practice not only what goes right, because that's what you want to practice over and over and over again, but if you find that your visualization is making you go in a spiral, like thinking about your left leg canter not happening, what you can do is think, okay, the left leg canter didn't work, oh my God, and then think, okay, what am I going to do to fix it? And then visualize what you do to fix it to get back on track and then continue on with your test. I was listening, I can't remember which Olympian it was. I feel like it was Ingrid Klimke. And she was talking about one of her cross-country runs, one of her championship cross-country runs. And I can't remember which horse she was on. But essentially, she was, and this was years ago, essentially, she was practicing and visualizing every step of her cross-country round and what she would do if her horse did A, if her horse did B, if her horse did C. She had all these different spiral out like plans of if her horse got this many strides, or if her horse was labored, or what would happen if he went long there, or what this and that and that. And she had a game plan for each, visualized, so much so that she had visualized the striding off one of the combinations or something, that if he got unbalanced and if she fell off, she was going to jump back on and do this and continue on. And some people might think, well, that's, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. But what actually happened was that a whole bunch of people were falling off and getting injured at this one section in the course. And she went, and she, because she had mentally prepared herself to what to do if she did fall, she fell off, jumped back on, and kept going. And this was, like I said, years ago, before like they had changed the rules where like if you had a fall on course, you were out. But so it's okay to visualize the mistakes that happen as long as you visualize how you fix them. And so, Jennifer, like I said, practice your visualization with something that doesn't cause you anxiety first, and get that skill really in place, and then bring it into your riding. Because that's probably what's happening, is you're getting kind of anxiety, visualizing your anxiety, and that's what's making it spiral. But great questions. Someone's asking, is it better to braid your horse's mane a day before the show or while at the show before you warm up? That depends on your ride time and how good you are at braiding, and if you have a slinky or PJs. So if you ride at 8 a.m., braid the night before. If you ride at 4 p.m., feel free to braid the day of. If you're really good at braiding and you know your horse will stand for braiding and you can get it done in 20, 30 minutes, you have a lot more flexibility of when you do it. If you don't know how your horse stands or you haven't braided in a while, give yourself a solid hour and a half. I can pop out a mane in 20 minutes, but if it's on a young horse that's never had its mane braided before, that can be a pain in the ass if you keep shuffling it and then it goes up to 40 minutes, right? And you don't want to be having that fight with your horse just before you're going to get on and get warmed up. The other thing you can do too is get, like, I call them slinkies, or some people call them PJs, or maybe someone else has another name for it in the chat they can list. But they're like these neck cover things that you put over top of their mane. And so what I typically like to do is, if I know I'm not going to have time to do a full mane in the morning, or if it's a young horse or something like that, I'll do straight braids, put the slinky or PJs on, and then the next morning I'll go and I'll band them up or I'll stitch them up, and then they look a lot nicer. And then the majority of the work has been done the night before. Carolyn's saying we call them slinky too. Oh, Stacy says sleazies. Yeah, PJs, sleazies, slinkies, whatever you want to call them. They're a great investment to get if you can get one. Stacy's asking, I'll be showing a tiny pony while my boy rehabs. Any tips on making a pony look more horse-like? Well, what are some tips to taking a new-to-me horse to a horse show? So first off, you won't get any points down for riding a pony, so that's great news. There are a few things that will make the pony look funny. Sometimes white saddle pads are quite large, and so just make sure that the saddle pad is the right size for the pony. I've seen some ponies and they come in with the little kids, and this is nothing on them, but like their mom has just gone out and bought a white saddle pad and it takes up the whole back of the pony and it looks a little funny, like a kid in a Halloween costume or something. So make sure the saddle pad fits. But other than that, there's not really much you can do. Sometimes you can do different size braids. If the pony's mane is really short, or sorry, the pony's neck is really short, you can do more braids to make it look longer. But depends, I don't know if you're tiny pony has a long neck or a short neck. So you can do little tricks like that, but don't worry too much about being on a small horse and things like that. Really focus on your rhythm, your suppleness, your connection, your basics, because that's what's gonna make the difference in your class. Any tips to taking a new to me horse to a horse show? Try and find out the history. Have they done a lot of shows before? What's their routine when they go to shows? Do they get off the trailer and go for a walk right away? Or do they go straight to their stall to eat? Those are things that can really make a horse feel comfortable if they know the routine. And if you have somebody going with you, that's always a handy with a new horse. Knowing if they tie to the trailer, if they're scared of anything like any hoses or things like that, knowing kind of the background of the horse can help. Sometimes horses are scared of flowers and things like that. So getting to the show early so that you can do a walk around the competition area before it closes and things like that to kind of get you familiar with if they're scared of anything is a great suggestion. Let's see what else is here. Christine says, besides getting there early, lunging and groundwork, do you have any other tips for dealing with a young green off the track thoroughbred who's tensed off property? This will be his first show. We will be doing an intertest. Very exciting. Best of luck. So the best thing you can do to help a horse with anxiety or stress is giving them questions they already know the answers to. So what that means is if you're used to at home doing the head down exercise or doing the bending, disengaging the hindquarters exercise, do that because the showgrounds is not the place to teach them something new to help them with their anxiety. They're going to get relaxation and understanding of the situation through associating it with something else that they know, right? So trying to do the same things and the same routine is really helpful. Walking, lots and lots and lots of walking, getting them around the competition arena before the night before, walking with a senior horse or a more seasoned horse, that can make a really big difference going around so that they're with a buddy when they see all the scary stuff. Just lots and lots of walking and then lots of downtime and quiet time in the stall, letting them come back down. The other thing to do is, I don't know when this horse show is for you, but as much off-property work you can do before you get to the horse show is the best. And even at the show itself, don't think of it like, oh, I have to show and be perfect in the arena. If you have to do a circle, if you have to do something, do it, right? Because it doesn't matter if, like, you know, the test goes right, as long as your horse has a really good experience, right? Chris is asking, how do they determine what time you'll ride at a show? Oh, that's a great question, Chris. So typically what happens at a dressage show is you do get an assigned time. So like 9:02 sometimes or like 10:53. Be sure you're not late because that will get you in trouble. Typically the times go the week of or the night before. And it's really determined by who else is in your class, how many people are in your class, and the judge's schedule. So it's not often like they'll do it like intro training first and all the way up, because it depends. Oftentimes, like, people who are riding upper levels are coaching people who are riding at lower levels. So they need breaks and things like that, or they're riding multiple horses. So they'll shuffle the classes around. And then also they try and not to break up the classes in between like lunch breaks and stuff like that. So you could be riding at whatever time, but they will post it. They're supposed to post it before, I think it's like 12 hours before, I think, on a regulated show. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they will have it posted before the first class of the day. If your horse is anxious at the show, what is the best way to relax your horse? Like I said earlier, doing the exercises they're really comfortable with doing at home. So whether that's head down, whether that's bending, whether that's stop starting, go stop as you walk them around, whatever they really know the answer to at home will help you at the horse show. And if you're like, I don't know if they do these things, or if you're like, I don't do groundwork, I only do groundwork at the horse show, if you practice it even just the week before or a couple days before you go to the horse show, you'd be amazed at the difference, like the stop start exercise is, and the disengaging the hindquarters, how much they can help your horse. Amelia's got two great free resources. Well, she's got lots of great resources, but one of them is the horse show resource, which should be above, below, sideways to this video. And then the other one is the groundwork exercises video PDF, which is on her website. that can help you there. And don't undermine, like I said earlier, bringing a seasoned show horse to, like, walk around with you and stuff like that. They even, like, depending on the showgrounds, you can have the other horse, like, standing beside their arena when you go to ride. That's not usually not allowed and things like that. Kathy says, are there horse age limitations for national showing? Yes, they're under regulations, not over regulations. So, like, again, I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what they are, but there's certain things like the four-year-olds can't do the PSG and stuff like that. Like, they have to be of a certain age to compete at a certain level of difficulty, but there's no upper level requirements that I know of. Like, you can have a 30-year-old horse going. There's no restrictions on upper level for age-wise. Great question. Carolyn says, I'm planning to show dressage for the first time this year. Congratulations. What is the most important thing to master for our first show season? We'll be showing intro slash training level. Have fun. That's the only thing. Have fun. Like, if I could go back and tell myself, every student, every person, have fun. Just make the first season fun. Like, make every season fun. Make every show fun. But, like, the moment you start putting pressure on yourself that you want to get a certain score, or you want to make a certain thing, and you start to take the fun out of it, like, it's not enjoyable anymore. Really just have fun, go to the show, know what your best is, know what you want to achieve against yourself rather than against everyone else. And relaxation, like, bring that to the ring, bring that to your practice, bring that to your warm up. Because it really doesn't matter what level you're showing at. If you have fun and you have relaxation, you're going to have a blast. And that will come through with your tests as well. Kim says, I usually ride two tests. One is a throwaway, as it seems that the horse spooks at something in the ring. How can we do better at that first test? Great question, Kim. Yeah, and that's what I was kind of alluding to earlier too. You know, sometimes with the young horses, we have a test that's, we just say it's a schooling round just because we know something silly is going to happen. The important thing to remember is that spooks and stuff will happen whatever show you're at, whatever level. Like, what was it at London with Carl Hester and Nip Tuck, or was it, maybe it wasn't London, but he was riding Nip Tuck and he, like, majorly spooked at E or something like that in the middle of, like, the walk tour. And, like, can you imagine being at the Olympic? Like, you'd just be kicking yourself, but it happens. It's horses. Like, it's okay. Typically speaking, like, the day before on warm-up day, the arenas will be open for you to familiarize yourself. So you can go in and, like, look at everything. And that's a great time. You can either do it walking, hand walking in there and, like, look around at everything, go down to the end and that sort of thing. Or you can do it riding and that sort of stuff. So, and like I said, take a senior horse with you, go and do it all and let them see everything and settle in. And also, like we were talking earlier, like, knowing your test, knowing what movement, like, where it ends and starts, so that you can say, hey, if there is a movement, maybe instead of it being a whole throwaway test, you just make it so, oh, it's a throwaway movement. And then you work from there. So it's, oh, I had two throwaway movements in this test, but it wasn't a throwaway test because I liked the rest of it. And so you just kind of change your perspective on that. We have another question. Does the judge say hi while you're doing your test? If yes, do you have to reply for a higher mark on your test? No. So actually, the judge is not supposed to talk to you at all. And here's the reason. So the judge's booth is kind of scary. It's this, you know, or this table or judge's table. It's this hut thing with these two people in it rustling papers and eating snacks. And your horse comes by and they're like, they can't really see it inside until they come further, like, perpendicular to it. And so it can be quite scary. So if the judge says hello to the horse immediately relaxes and like, oh, it's just a person. I'm all good. It's not a dragon, you know, that's going to eat me or whatever. But what happens is if the next horse comes around and the judge is doing something else and doesn't say hello, they've changed the field of play for the horses. The horse one has an unfair advantage that it knows that it's not a dragon in the judge's booth that's going to eat them, whereas horse two doesn't. So the judge is not supposed to say anything. That being said, sometimes at schooling shows, they will say hello or, you know, come on down or something like that because they can see that the horse is not having a good time and they want to help. And in those situations, you know, it's not about points. It's not, they're not qualifying for anything. It's about making the show experience good for you, good for your horse. And so in that case, the horse, they'll come down. What I typically recommend people do is that when they pass the judge's booth, because you should always go around once before they go to ring the bell and get you in. What you want to do is, as you pass the judge's booth, you look to the scribe and you say, "Hi, number 123, riding first level test one." And you might even say your name, right? Because then the scribe knows who you are. You've said something, and maybe the scribe will say something back, even though they're not supposed to either. But then it kind of sets you up for success with that. Cool. Reading the comments. Carolyn says, "I've seen in schooling shows the judge talk to the rider after to give tests to give comments." Yes, that does happen too. And sometimes you can go to shows that are like rider test shows where there purposely is time in the schedule for afterwards for something. Or sometimes, like, the judge will, if it is a schooling show and they're allowed to talk, they'll say, "Hey, by the way, you missed that circle there," or, "Hey, don't cluck because then you're gonna lose points," things like that. Or, "Hey, you're wearing a piece of illegal tack, please change that before you come back." But typically speaking, at regulated shows, the only time the judge is allowed to talk to you while you're in their arena is if they've rung you out for something. So if they've rung you out because they've seen blood and they want you to come over so they can check you, or you've gone off course and they have to tell you where to go. But yeah, great questions. I've got one more on my list and then I'll let you guys go. Kelly is asking, what's in fashion as far as braiding, tails, wraps, etc.? Oh, I love this question, Kelly. Are there color restrictions for coats and pads? I believe my irons have to be swapped out for regular ones because they're red safety ones that are have a wider footplate, but is it okay for the cantle of my saddle to be red? Great question, Kelly. So first off, we had a major rule change in the last couple of years where we're now allowed to have different colored jackets that are bright colored. We're allowed to wear breeches that are not white or tan and things like that. So you do have a little bit more flexibility of what you wear. Typically, it should be matching. So, like, I think the regulation is if you have gray boots, you have to be wearing a gray jacket, or if you have green boots, you have to be wearing a green jacket, things like that. And typically speaking, I would recommend that you have things matching. So I wouldn't wear like green breech, dark green breeches, and like a dark red saddle pad or something like that. I would try and keep them all the same color tone. I'm a big fan of just white, gray, and black. Mostly because it hides things. White not so much, but gray hides a lot. Black, sometimes if you get dirt on it, you can see the dirt. But gray, like a dark gray, can really hide some like imperfections. So have a think on that as well. If there's something that you kind of want to hide yourself, that will help. Things to think about with show coats, think, are there buttons on the tops of your shoulders or in the back? Is that going to accentuate you being crooked? You know, if you're wearing breeches that have a black panel, make sure the black panel is straight, things like that. If you have a brow band and it's a droopy blow, but brow band, that might accentuate that your horse's head is lower than it actually is. Or if it's like a sparkly tiara and the horse has doesn't have great contact, is moving all around, that will accentuate those things. So try and think about what your horse is like and your body or rider position faults, and try and match an outfit that will complement that. But the nice thing is you have the world is your oyster, and pretty much if you're clean and tidy and presentable, you're gonna be okay. Do you have any preference of people wearing colors or traditional black? I prefer the white, but like I said, the white, the black, and the gray. I'm a big traditionalist in that sense, but I'm not opposed to a little bit of color or a little bit of sparkle. But like I said, it has to be done smartly, because there's nothing worse than like someone wearing pinstripes on their jacket and then they're sitting like this, and you're like, "Well, now I can see that you're crooked in every movement." Whereas if you're wearing a dark color jacket, that can kind of hide that a little bit. So someone's asking, if your bridle has a flash noseband around the horse's muzzle, do you have to have it on, or can you take it off if the horse doesn't like it? You do have to have a noseband in regulated dressage. But it doesn't, there are regulations on what type of noseband. But if you just have like a noseband with a flash on it, you can take the flash off. And if it has like the little attachment, you're fine to go. That doesn't matter. But you do need a noseband of some sort. Certain ones are illegal. I'm trying to remember. I think it's just the moon, like the half moon one that's illegal. It's like it's the one with the metal pieces on it is illegal. Because I think the figure eight is legal, if I remember correctly. Again, I'm not a steward, I'm a judge. I lean on my stewards, they're NTDs, they're fantastic people, and they keep me in the know and the straight for all those questions. I often radio out and I'm like, is that a piece of illegal tech? And then they look it up or they know, and they're like, no, they're good. But yeah, so definitely ask that. Stacey's asking, saying thank you at the end, do you need to walk all the way up towards the judge or is it okay at X? It's fine to say it at X if you'd like to. Sometimes if you want to walk all the way up and give yourself more time to kind of walk out, that works too. One thing I did once was that I had a friend that was riding after me on a young horse, and she was going to come in right as I saluted to like go around the outside. And so we coordinated it beforehand that I would walk all the way down to the end to say goodbye and thank you to the judge and walk all the way back. So she had more time to go around the outside, which was a little sneaky of us because obviously the judge can't ring the next person in until you've left the court, right? But it's up to you. I kind of like to go down to the end. If your horse is a tiny little pony, it's going to take forever to get down there and back. I might not go all the way. Or if your horse is really slow, I might not go all the way either. Great questions. That gets to the end of my questions and unfortunately the end of my time. Amelia said to do half an hour and I've gone a little bit over, but thank you so much for sticking with me. You will be back to having Amelia next week, but please let her know in the comments below if this was a fun session with me or maybe not seeing me again for a while. I will never be offended, but it's good to give Amelia feedback because then she knows, hey, if she has to go away, she's got someone that can come in and sub in that you guys won't mind. But if you don't like me, that's not a problem too. I don't, no offense, take it. All right, have a lovely night, everyone, and we will see you.
So that's it for this week. Thank you so much for all of your awesome questions, and I hope you learned something new from listening. If you're new to the podcast and you'd like a question answered on a future one, get in touch on Facebook through Amelia's Dressage Club, Instagram at Amelia Newcomb Dressage, or YouTube at Amelia Newcomb Dressage, and mark the question for the live sessions. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you like it, please share it, review it, and tune in again next week. Thanks so much and happy riding.